Hello, hi friends. Welcome to podcast Hubungan Internasional. This podcast is brought to you by the Department of International Relations, Universitas Gadjah Mada. I am Kevin and I will be the host for this podcast. And I am very excited to warmly welcome our very special guests. We have Sana and also Benjamin who are cycling to campaign for Western Sahara. Stay tuned for more. Hello, welcome to Yogyakarta, Sana and Ben.
Thank you. We're really happy to be here today in Yogyakarta and outside of the faculty.
Of course. It seems like you are exhausted and tired.
Yeah, we have been biking almost every day for 1.5 years now.
And you are both from Sweden and you side both from there.
Yes, we're both born in Sweden and we started biking last year in May.
How many countries have you passed before Indonesia and how many more to go?
We've been to 18 countries so far, with Indonesia being number 18. And I think we have 12 or so left on this trip before we reach the refugee camps where the Sahrawi people live in Algeria.
So about how many kilometers?
So far, maybe 15,000 or kilometers, something like that.
We stopped counting a while ago.
Yeah.
Too much.
All right, my first question. Today marks your 516th day on the road. Over 1.5 years, and as you have mentioned earlier, that you spent for more than 15,000 kilometers cycling from Sweden to reach other countries, this campaign must be very close to your heart. Can you please tell us about it?
Yeah, it's very close to our hearts. Once you go to Western Sahara or you go to the refugee camps and you meet Sahrawi people and you get to know them, you can't really forget about the place, about the situation there, and especially like how unknown it is. And that's what drives us to do this.
And they really need our help with raising awareness. They're not able to travel like we are. So it's really... Everyone that knows their story has an obligation to help them share their story because it's been unknown for the past 50 years.
Okay, so if you may share with us a little bit, what happened in Western Sahara actually?
So they were first colonized by Spain for 100 years. This was during the time that Europe was colonizing Africa. And in 1975, instead of getting independence, they were invaded by Morocco and Mauritania. And they have been occupied by Morocco now for 50 years, very similar to what's happening in Palestine, you know, settler colonialism, no political rights, no human rights. People are being beaten, arrested every day. And about half of the population live in refugee camps in Algeria, where they're totally dependent on humanitarian aid. And no one knows about this. It's totally unknown.
I see. So you just believe that the Western Sahara is the last colony in Africa?
That's right. And not only that, it's also the biggest colony remaining in the entire world. And we were in Taiwan at a conference for decolonization. All these academic experts talking about modern day colonialism. And even when we ask those people, do you know about Western Sahara? Most of them had never heard of the place.
So what kinds of responses did you get from people? I mean, when you do cycling, people must be able to see you. So do you have any thoughts about it regarding the responses from other people when they saw you?
It's mostly shock. I mean, that's why we are biking, why we chose to bike, because it's the shock effect. People are wondering, why are two Swedish people carrying a different flag, you know, the flag of Western Sahara? They don't even know what flag it is. So they always stop and ask us, like, where are you from? Where are you going? And every time we tell them, people are just surprised and very supportive, of course, of what we're doing, except for Moroccan people. But yeah, everyone else supportive. Yeah.
And it's a difficult story to tell. You have a couple of minutes with someone on the road. They've never heard of Western Sahara before. They don't really understand who we are. They're not used to seeing Swedish people on big bicycles. And we try to explain the story as fast as we can. And we hope that this leaves them with the impression that something is happening in Western Sahara. And hopefully they'll go home and do some research to learn more.
So since you have mentioned earlier that there are still many people not know about Western Sahara and you have a very limited time since you are biking, so what would be the three things that you want to say to the people?
So three unknown things about Western Sahara. The first thing is that for the past 50 years, about 200,000 Sahrawi people have been living in refugee camps in the middle of the desert, waiting to return to their country. And in this desert place that they're living, there's no water, there's no food, no electricity, no internet when they came. And they've been living like this for 50 years, just waiting to return to their country.
Another thing is that their country is divided by the second longest in the world. The wall is 2,700 kilometers long, and it was built by Morocco with the help of Israel, since Israel is a strong ally of Morocco.
And the wall is separating these refugee camps from the occupied part of Western Sahara. And in the occupied Western Sahara, there's no journalists, no human rights organizations, no universities, no rights whatsoever.
So with all the things you have mentioned before, what can we do to help support the people of Western Sahara?
So there's a lot of things. One thing is raising awareness, because like we said, no one in Indonesia knows about Western Sahara. So we are, for example, like holding lectures, showing documentaries about Western Sahara. This is something you can do as well at your campus or in your association or wherever you work. Just talk about Western Sahara. You know, there's a lot of resources and we're happy to share them with people, and they can move them forward, pay them forward and share them to other people.
It's also possible to speak directly with Sahrawi people online, because in the recent years, they got internet in the refugee camps and in the occupied territories. And one thing we always recommend is to have a Sahrawi speaking directly in your class, to your group of friends, your family, and explaining the situation from the ground, because there's no better source than the actual people who are living that experience.
Also, as students or, you know, members of university, I have to say that Western Sahara is very under-researched as a topic. And there's almost no researchers talking about Western Sahara or even knowing that it's a country. So as a student or a professor, you could help do research, write your thesis about Western Sahara.
Of course, on the humanitarian side, there is a lot of doctors from abroad in the refugee camps, but not a single doctor from Indonesia has ever gone there, as far as we know. So if you have anyone in your network that would be interested in that opportunity, all the things we mentioned up until now, please contact us and we will be happily to explain more. Send us an email and we will set you up with the contacts in the refugee camps. If you want to go there yourself or if you just want to speak with someone from there, we're happy to facilitate.
Okay, so not many Indonesians have the opportunity to visit Western Sahara to see the Sahrawi people. So do you mind to share with us how it feels to be with them?
Of course. They are an amazingly warm and hospitable people. For example, in the camps, like I mentioned, there's a humanitarian crisis. They don't have clean water, a lot of food, but still they open their homes to anyone, any foreigner who wants to visit. And they're super friendly and kind. Even though they've been living like this for so long, and, you know, the unemployment is over 90%. People don't have a lot to do in the camp. And still, they have the time to be, like, you know, so kind, despite everything they've experienced, all of the trauma that they have. And it feels like, you know, a second family almost.
There are so many children in the refugee camps that don't have anything to do. There are schools there, but there are no activities after school. And in the middle of the desert, there isn't much you can play with. But when we were there, we were playing so much with the kids. And, you know, seeing them laugh, it really reminds you that a child is a child, no matter where they are. And all of them deserve a future, which is really one of the reasons that we're doing this journey. But the occupied areas is a total different story. When you want to travel to occupied Western Sahara, you have to do it in a very You have to pretend that you're a tourist. If you come as a human rights activist or as a journalist, you are denied entry. And I went there, and there was over 10 military checkpoints when I took the bus from southern Morocco into the occupied territory. Soldiers always going onto the bus and interrogating you, asking who you are, why you are there, what are your plans, what do you intend to do. And even if you manage to get inside the occupied territories, which is itself a very difficult task, you're always followed by the Moroccan secret police. There are always a group of men behind you, monitoring everything you do. Your hotel room is searched, your things are wiretapped. There is no freedom to move or meet Sahrawis whatsoever. But the Sahrawi people are also a very brave people and a very intelligent people, so they managed to hide me from the Moroccan police in an apartment. They put me in a car and basically drove very fast until the police lost the track of us. And only by doing something extreme like that, it was a car chase. The police followed the car, but the Sahrawis were driving faster. It was all very dangerous, but we managed to escape after a while. Only through going to such extreme lengths was I able to meet with the local Sahrawi people in the occupied territories. And I met with several political prisoners who had been tortured in Moroccan jails and told me the most awful stories that you can imagine. I met one woman. She had had acid and chemicals poured over her head. She didn't have any hair anymore. I met so many people who had been tortured, beaten. They were disabled now because they couldn't move properly anymore after the beatings. But still they demonstrate, and all of them are arrested because they go out into the street with a flag like this. This flag is forbidden in Western Sahara. Even the words Western Sahara cannot be spoken in Western Sahara. If you say those words, you can be arrested. There is this 12-year-old girl in school. She drew this flag in her notebook during class. When the teacher saw that, he called the police. And the police came and dragged her off from school into her house and arrested her father as a disciplinary action towards this child. So there is so much oppression happening there, but despite all of this, they give you tea and they let you into their families and they open up and you laugh together and they really move you and touch your heart. If you've been there, if you've met with them, you cannot forget them. And it's up to us to make sure that the world doesn't forget about them either, because they deserve their freedom. And the only way to get freedom is if people demand it. And the only way for people to demand something is if they know about something, which is why we are in Indonesia today.
I think I remember that I watched a video of that. There was a scene where a journalist came to Western Sahara to interview some Sahrawi people, but then they have to hide. They have to do few secretly in a hotel room. So I believe that the situation in Western Sahara now is very... not good that the police and the Morocco government really strict in terms of regulate the people coming from outside to enter Western Sahara.
Yeah, we know a lot of people that have been deported. Mm. Even like a Japanese professor friend of ours, he just wanted to visit the UN. Mm-hmm. The UN is the only organization allowed there, and they are totally... the UN office is occupied by Moroccan soldiers, and if you enter, you are deported instantly. So it's hard to imagine for us as Swedish people, as Indonesians now, to see military in every centimeter of the street.
Only the United Nations that allowed to enter it.
The UN has a responsibility to oversee a referendum. So there was supposed to be a referendum for independence in 91. It has never happened. And that is their main mission, and also to oversee the ceasefire. And they are allowed to be there, but, you know, the Moroccan flag hangs over the UN mission. Moroccan soldiers guard the UN mission. They surveil all of the UN work. So it's really like a part of the Moroccan mission.
When we were in Denmark, we met the former force commander of this mission, a Danish gentleman, Kurt Mosgaard. And when he came to the UN mission, he was so outraged to see the Moroccan flag hanging over a UN building. It's the UN flag that's supposed to be there. The UN is a symbol of impartiality, of neutrality, and you cannot put a nation state symbol over any UN mission anywhere in the world. But Morocco does so. So the first thing he did was take down that flag. And the first thing the Moroccans did, they were outraged. They didn't want him to do so. So the Foreign Office of Morocco, they called the headquarters in New York, the United Nations, and said, who is this guy taking him away? Please fire him. And then Denmark got all of this pressure from the United Nations saying that the Moroccans are so angry with you. What are you doing in Western Sahara? It became a whole scandal because he took down that flag, but he didn't budge. He was a very, you know, strong military man with principles. Very few of those these days. And he remained in Western Sahara for about a year and a half, 2 years. He didn't complete his term. Eventually, he was forced to go back to Denmark, but he didn't budge on that position. But today, Moroccan flags are over the UN mission and Moroccan soldiers are surrounding the UN mission. Every telephone in the UN mission is tapped by the Moroccan government. All the communication is monitored. And if a Sahrawi person wants to report human rights violations, say that they've been tortured and they want to tell the world about it, if they go to the United Nations mission, first of all, they don't have a human rights mandate, so they can't report it even though they hear it or even if they see it themselves. And second, that Sahrawi person will be put in prison by the Moroccan soldiers that are guarding the mission outside. So it's a complete farce. It's a complete scandal, the United Nations failure in Western Sahara. And the reason it continues like this is because nobody is raising their voice. And we hope that Indonesia can be one of the countries that raises its voice in regards to this issue. But it starts with awareness, right? First, we have to know about this, that it's happening.
All right, we are now at the end of our podcast. Is there anything you want to say to our friends outside the Western Sahara?
So I think a lot of the times we feel politically depressed, like we as individuals don't have any power to change the world or do anything, basically, because we're not the president of a country. We're not in the governmental, you know, leadership. But I can say that there are a lot of things you can do as an individual. And the whole reason why we have the rights we have today is because individual people have taken charge to change the situation for the better. Indonesia is an example of that. You know, you used to have a dictatorship. The reason why you don't is because you have parents, you have grandparents that sacrificed themselves so that you can have the rights that you have today. And we want the people to do the same for Western Sahara. We know that Indonesian people show up for Palestine. We saw a demonstration the other day of 2 million Indonesians with the Palestinian flag. Imagine if we could see the same for Western Sahara, the forgotten colony in the world where the Sahrawi people are suffering just the same as the Palestinians. And we hope that the people who are listening today will feel empowered to do something for Western Sahara now, whether it be to hold a lecture about Western Sahara, talk to your family, watch a documentary, read about it.
We are the people that we have been waiting for. It's up to us, the people who are alive today, this generation, you and me, to take charge and change the world for the better. No one else is going to do it for us. It requires all of us. And it's not enough being angry at your smartphone of the bad news of the world. What's really needed is action to make the world a better place. And that starts with us.
Okay, thank you very much, Sana and Ben, for sharing with us your knowledge, your stories and experiences with us. Thank you for stopping by at Universitas Gajah Mada and spending time with us at Podcast Hubungan Internasional. We wish you a wonderful stay in Jogja and a productive campaign all together. Hi friends, that's all the time we have for today. Catch us on our official YouTube channel and Spotify. Thank you, take care and bye-bye.